My name is Sue Zappel, and I'm one of the local Dharma leaders, and I'm going to be sharing the Dharma this morning with you all. This month is on the eight worldly winds. So both Jerry on the first Sunday and Lyndall last Sunday gave really good talks introducing us to this topic of the eight worldly winds, gain and loss, pleasure and pain, praise and blame, fame and disrepute. And they really helped us understand some of the basics of these pairs. When the Buddha was describing these, he said, all eight come and go like the wind. To be happy, rest like a great tree in the midst of them all. So for a couple minutes, I'd like you to indulge me, and we're just going to do some imagining of being a great tree. And if you want, maybe even close your eyes as I kind of guide us a little bit into how these worldly winds affect us. So let's imagine that we're all trees and there's just a slight breeze out there. And you found out that you got assigned to the project that you've been really wanting to work on at work. And, oh, you feel that gain. And then you go to the first team meeting and you discover that one of the people on the team is that same person that you really have a difficult time working with. Oh, loss. And you're just kind of swaying in the breeze of this gain and loss. Then it's the holidays, and you just love the lights and the trees and the baking and the gift giving, and there's so much pleasure. And then you gather with family, and there's Uncle Bert, who always says something offensive to you. Oh, the pain of that. Okay, we're still just kind of swaying. The breeze may be just, 8 miles an hour, not very big. Then you've been working for a really long time on this new creation. You know, you can fill it in as in for your own life. Maybe it's a short story or an art piece or some kind of craft that you've been working on, or your garden. Or a new song you learned on the guitar, or just, rearranged your house, or made something that was just delicious, and you're feeling really good about it. And you get together with friends to share about it, and nothing. It's as if you didn't even say anything. There's no praise, no recognition, just kind of indifference. Ooh, ouch. That kind of hurts, and maybe the wind picked up a little bit there. Then a friend called and is really mad at you, blaming you for something she said you did. You believe you're innocent, but the friend implies that the friendship's over. What you did was so awful. And you keep thinking about, did I do that? Did I say that? Am I responsible? Oh, Lordy, the winds are really blowing. So just get a feel for how these external changing conditions affect us. Enough of our imaginings, and I'll get into my core of my talk. So in and of themselves, as Jerry and Lyndall were talking about, these four pairs of experiences aren't problems. They're just kind of natural occurrences in life. And both sides of the pair often exist together. We can see them as a continuum. Gain arises and stays a while and then disappear. And the other wind of loss is already there. That assignment at work, it was already there. You never know who's going to be on your team and whether it's going to work out or not. Those first couple cookies in the Christmas box, oh my goodness, they taste so delicious. But the fourth or fifth one, not so much. We accomplish something and we're proud of it and we receive praise, and But then something happens and we hope for praise and it just doesn't come. And then all that disappointment. We make mistakes and we receive criticism and blame happens. Sometimes blame happens and we didn't even deserve it. So the first two of gain and loss and pleasure and pain, you know, they're, Lindell was describing them, they're pretty personal. But the praise and blame and fame and ill repute are more part of relationships, you know, how the outer world sees us and how we want to be seen. Joseph Goldstein describes these last two. He says that fame and disrepute are really just more generalized forms of praise and blame. 2 weeks ago, when Jerry had started this month on the wins, he said, these wins can be really difficult. And the question arose for me, and I've been reflecting on it for these 2 weeks, why are they so difficult? And so I have a couple, some insights to share that I, how I answered that question for myself. And because the praise and blame area and the by association fame and ill repute seem to be the hardest of them all, my examples are going to be in that arena. And I think they're hard because they're all about relationships and how we relate to the world. The world relates to us. Both Jerry and Lindell talked about how we take these naturally occurring changing conditions and yet we turn them into suffering, especially in the area of praise and blame. You know, we go over and over and over them in our minds. We create stories and we give them a life way longer than they deserve. We can become so attached to those things we receive praise for. As the sutta says, our minds remain consumed with the status, with the praise. And often we take, especially when we're blamed for something, we take it on as if it's a whole new identity. I didn't only make a mistake for which I was blamed, but now I see myself as a mistake. So here are my five reflections, and I hope that while they're pretty personal to me, I hope they might prompt some of those reflections for you as to why these wins can be so difficult. The first one that I thought about is, it's really connected to how I generally feel about myself and my life. You know, if I'm feeling pretty solid in my life, things are going pretty well, I like what I'm doing, kind of feel okay about who I am, not too filled with self-judgment, it might come around every now and then, but it doesn't like live here very solidly. Then when these pairs of praise and blame and the other ones show up, I can mostly just be like a tree, just kind of swaying in the breeze. But then there are times when those old tendencies, those old habits, make it way more difficult to just rest like a tree. When I'm just enmeshed in that place of self-criticism, I don't like my life, I don't like me, I don't like anything about what I've been doing, I think you can probably all identify with being there at some point. Then when the blame starts coming, it seems to confirm what I've already believed, that I'm not okay. And when we don't like certain parts of ourselves, it opens us up to being way more sensitive to blame and more likely to take that and turn it into a sense of shame. And this sense of this kind of self-judgment may even make it difficult for us to receive praise, often dismissing it out of hand, that we don't really believe it. You know, last week, Lindell said that Andy Warhol said that fame only lasts 15 minutes. I think that's even longer than it usually lasts. Same thing with praise. But if fame and praise are so short-lived, why do we believe that the blame and loss and loss of status will last so much longer? So a second reflection has to do with the identities and labels that we take on. You know, we all carry certain labels that identify who we are or who we wish to be. how we wish to present ourselves in the world. Many of these may have come originally from our families or our culture, but as we became adults, we claimed them as our own. And praise can really keep these labels strong and alive. And when blame or censure occur, those labels and identities can get really shaken. So as I've shared before, I run a small business. It's a village of a dozen small businesses. My partner and I created this community where tenants can grow their businesses, enjoy the cooperation and assistance of others, and they benefit from the generosity and goodwill of the owners. That's me. So I receive quite a bit of praise for what we call Pellington Village. I get praise from tenants, from neighbors. There was even an article written about the property some years ago. But recently, a tenant wanted to end his lease, and he had found a new location that was better for him, and I was really happy for him. It really seemed like he had outgrown the space. But when it came time for him to be leaving, his departure was really rancorous. He accused me of mistreating him, of acting in a really disrespectful way. He not only shared it with me, he shared it with all the other tenants. Whew! I am so attached to this image of myself that I am like this super great landlady. I was really shaken by that accusation, even though I felt that the blame was not deserved. Another example about identities and labels. So since 1986, I've lived in a junkyard, and that is not an exaggeration. It's exactly how it looked. A couple of you who are here who've known me a lot longer know that that's exactly true. And there was even an article that a friend shared with me that came out in the 90s about how our neighbors just hated what we did here and how it looked, and it was a junkyard. And of course, my partner Bill loved it. So for me, my identity around it was that I've always wanted to be a little more edgy in my life than I actually am. I've always been attracted to those who kind of dance to a different tune, who kind of live outside of society's norms. And it might have been one of the things that drew me to Bill to begin with. And so I was known as the junk lady. And I liked being the junk lady. You know, it was kind of like different, edgy. And then Bill died 4+ years ago, and I cleaned up the junkyard. I got rid of 230+ tons of stuff, sold all of his old tools. I created new spaces. And while I really like the way it looks, boy, do I miss that identity of edgy and different. And now I'm just a landlady. So when, you know, praise or blame or those kinds of feedback come in, I notice that difficulty around the identities and labels. A third reflection has to do with our relationship to blame itself. It seems like we're really afraid of it. I mean, we hope for and desire praise, and if we don't get it, we're disappointed. But boy, we have a different kind of relationship to being blamed. It's as if when we get blamed for something, it becomes this whole new identity that we're screw up. You know, we didn't do anything right. When I first became a local Dharma leader, we used to meet with Tim Guile, one of our guiding teachers, you know, 3-4 times a year. And he did these amazing things. I never realized that he was teaching us about criticism and feedback and blame. We'd all get together and he would assign us spontaneously to give a mini Dharma talk or to answer a Dharma question. And then everybody else would give us feedback. And he instructed us all to give feedback by first saying what you liked about it. And then, you know, what was missing or what might not have come across very well or maybe even an actual mistake that you made in quoting the Dharma. And then Tim had the person who was receiving this feedback to first, you know, listen to it. And if it fits, own it and learn from it. And if it, you feel like it doesn't fit, don't dismiss it too quickly, because you really want to investigate where, whether your dismissiveness is defensiveness or whether, you know, maybe there really is something there to learn. And then if it doesn't fit, remember that criticism is just another person's perspective and preference. So how we understand blame, I think, is really important, and it might be a clue as to why it can be so difficult to receive. So when the feedback comes in and it's true and helpful, we can appreciate the person for sharing it and take responsibility for whatever mistake we made and work to prevent it happening again. And when mistake is blame is misplaced, when we're blamed for something we didn't do, how do we respond then? So Joseph Goldstein says that words of praise and blame only exist as ideas in other people's minds. You know, and here we do, we take this blame and just make it this enormous thing. But he says they only exist as ideas in other people's minds. So he goes on to say, when you're blamed, he asks you to ask yourself, am I well established in the non-remorse of good sila? Sila being the Pali word for our general state ethics and values. If yes, if you're really well established in the non-remorse of good sila, then, you know, those, that blame was just another person's views and opinions. And if not, if you feel like, oh, maybe I'm not so well established, then it's a time to really look at our behavior. A fourth reflection that I've had is how praise and blame seem to be really connected to our sense of belonging and our sense of worth. You know, asking ourselves, where do we get our sense of worth or value from? You know, is it dependent on the number of friends you have on Facebook or followers if you're on Instagram or the kind of job you do? Or, you know, a few weeks back, I told the story of how after I left the city, I was a mid-level planner and had some sense of importance. And then I went and was a barista and making sandwiches in this little deli, and a city council person that I used to work with came in, and I saw her in line, and I told my coworker, I gotta go somewhere right now. So I ran away into the bathroom as if I, you know, as if somehow my dealing with my own issues of identity and praise and stuff were going to disappear in the bathroom. But, you know, I really felt that kind of, I created that sense of shame as if I had fallen from grace. For many of us, you know, our sense of worth or value seems to be tied to our desire to belong and to be liked. You know, when we feel like we're part of the group and we're liked, you know, and we receive that praise and it feels so good. But when we're not, when we feel like we don't belong, where we're not really acknowledged and validated, we can sometimes even assume blame or criticism when it's not even there. And when this desire to belong, to be liked, to be valued gets really big, I think we lose our perspective about praise and blame. When we can use our mindfulness and pause to reflect, we all know, you know, I'm not everybody's cup of tea. Neither are any of you. You know, we've just done this great day long on the Brahma Viharas where we're instructed to start with, you know, someone easy and then a benefactor, a neutral person, then a difficult person. And one of the things we've always all learned is that everyone here, you know, including me, is someone else's difficult person. I mean, it's just the truth of it. But when we reflect and we look at this desire to belong, to be included, to be liked, it can feel like a black hole. it's never going to be filled. Maya Angelou had a wonderful understanding of this that she shared in an old interview with Bill Moyers. She said, "We confuse belonging with fitting in, but the truth is that belonging is just in our heart. And when we belong to ourselves and believe in ourselves above all else, we belong everywhere and nowhere." And then I might offer with great humility to Maya Angelou's comments, because we also know that self is a construct, that we belong here. We belong in this life, in this moment, with this history. We belong, period. And the last reflection is how much the difficulty with the winds is really tied with the four distortions of mind. And I'll just restate them in case people have forgotten. The four distortions are taking what is impermanent to be permanent, taking what is unsatisfying to be satisfying, taking what is impersonal to be about me and mine, and taking what is unattractive to be attractive. So in these reflections, there was kind of some practice suggestions implied, but I'd like to share some specific things about how we can work with these difficulties. And the first, as with everything in our practice, is mindfulness. It's the very first tool. We have to really pay attention to know what is happening, to know whether there's a wind even blowing, to really sit with the spinning, the presence of any of this, you know, to not brush it off too quickly. Stay with it as long as you're able, as best as you are able, as Philip Moffitt kept on reminding us of this weekend. If the new wind is too strong, if it's really just tossing you around, then only stay for a while and then come back with it. But feel the suffering of that spinning of that wind. Seeing the suffering and how we respond to the winds is so important. You know, we've all heard the teachings about the Four Noble Truths, and each of them has three aspects. And the first aspect is that we have to know what is actually occurring. We have to feel that little bit, that we have to know it. This is what's up right now. The second aspect, which I often try to like run away from, is really feeling the ouch of whatever is up. Really feeling the blame or the shame. The second aspect is sometimes called standing under. It's like really allowing the pain of that to filter down. Because it's only through that full experience of the suffering that we can move to the third aspect, which is full understanding. Another suggestion is to really take time to investigate what might be underneath the responses you have. Is your sense of identity being threatened? Are you taking a single event and turning it into a lifelong story? Answering for yourself what I did, why are these winds so difficult? And to answer that requires a really beautiful level of honesty. It's kind of that intimate peeling away of ignorance and self-deceit. And we do that because we care for this mind and heart and body, this being. Investigation is really an act of care. We can ask ourselves, what can I learn from praise and how I respond to it? What can I learn from fame, even that 5 minute of fame? And what can I learn from blame and what happens inside of me and why it stirs up so much difficulty? And we might also ask, how are we using blame in our relationships to others? What can I learn about how I dish that out? All of these are a way of saying we need to take responsibility for how we respond to these winds. The pain of blame and shame has a beginning. and we can look at it. What arises right before that sense of blame gets owned by us? You know, both Jerry and Lindell said to start with small events. The holidays are a great time to look at that. You know, we're often a little more sensitive. Families have a great way of stirring up some of our most entrenched habits. And the third noble truth is that there is an end of suffering. And the end of suffering is letting go of the attachment to whatever wind is grabbing you. Philip Moffat has this beautiful way of saying it. Let the experience go. Allow it to have its death in the flow of time. Allow its death to be the fertilizer for what you cultivate in the life that it has left for you. Let the blame go. Allow it to have its death in the flow of time. Allow the death of blame and shame to be the fertilizer for what you cultivate in the life that it has left for you. I'd like to end with a lovely poem by John Wellwood. Forget about enlightenment. Sit down wherever you are and listen to the wind singing in your veins. Feel the love, the longing, and fear in your bones. Open your heart to who you are right now, not who you would like to be, not the saint you're striving to become, but the being right here before you, inside you, around you. All of you is holy. You're already more and less than whatever you can know. Breathe out, touch in, let go. Thank you for your kind attention. I think I went a little long. I've been doing a lot of reflecting on Jerry's question. Why are these so difficult? So we now have a great opportunity to talk about this with each other. I'm reminded of when Philip Moffat was here a few weeks ago for his weekend, and he kept on saying to people when they would share something, wow, we're all benefiting from what you have to say. So I know some of you need to leave, and certainly it's fine for you to go. And if you're at all maybe open to staying and you don't usually, remember that we all benefit by whatever anyone else shares. It's the beauty of Sangha. So I'll give you a chance to leave. And then I'll do the hardest part of the day, which is to do the breakout groups. So in your group, I'd, you know, just like you to share what came up for you when you think about why are these winds so difficult? How are they difficult in your own life? And then I'll bring you back about 11:15. Remember that in these groups, we really listen open-heartedly. We give everyone a chance to share. We don't give advice. We try not to compare. Oh, that person really had something good to say. You know, we just listen and then speak from the heart and have a nice discussion. And then we'll come back and have more large group discussion. So this is a chance to share something that you feel is a useful insight for you, or something you heard in the group, you know, of course, keeping confidence, but, or questions, or what you've learned. Or... Yes, Leah, please.
Hey, everyone. Thank you very much for your talk, and thank you, Jane, for the meditation. I just keep coming back to the what you said about identity, and I've been working on looking at identity in the last few years of my life. I went to art school, I'm a writer, and I'm very attached to those ideas, but I also come from a really broken family, so I'm don't want that identity. You know, it's really interesting what you want to attach to and what you don't want to attach to. And say, like, the idea of saving face comes up. And really for me, in the end, it's just, like, go to the core of it. It's just the vulnerability and, like you said, the wanting to belong and the wanting to be worthy. And I really love, one of the last things you said was, we belong, period. You know, belonging to the earth and never mind all of this stuff that we collect around us, things and ideas about ourselves, and becoming comfortable with just belonging because we're here is just a really beautiful, gentle way of just allowing, and walking through the world without having to react, you know, to anything really. It sounds very joyful to me to belong just because we belong. So that's just, yeah, I don't want to get too attached to it, but you know, the pleasure of belonging, but you know what I mean? Just accepting vulnerability and like that can be joyful and that can be sad and holding both of those. Mm-hmm. That can be shameful or not shameful and holding both of those. And what is that shame about? And being able to just gently look at all of that and still belong, still be imperfectly belonging. That makes any sense. Thank you.
Wow, that's lovely. I mean, you just gave a little mini talk on equanimity, you know, if both parts are there and yet you're still here and you're belonging and being able to see it all and feel it all is really a way of caring for ourselves. Yeah. Thanks, Leah, for sharing all of that. I'm glad that it sparked some reflections.
Can I add one more thing?
Sure.
My mother was a rageaholic, mostly dry alcoholic, and she did not have the capacity to have tenderness for herself. And there was so much anger and fear around her vulnerability. Mm-hmm. So I just want to acknowledge my mom. And she's not on the planet anymore. But, you know, just having compassion and being able to, like, step back and see how much pain there was there. Mm-hmm. This talk really helps with that. Thank you.
Oh, good. Yeah, you know, you said something that really sparked for me that when we're not willing to really acknowledge our vulnerability, often anger comes out or defensiveness or whatever. Brené Brown has some really wonderful thoughts on vulnerability. Her book, I don't know what it's called, but she has a whole bunch of different books and TED Talks, and there's some really good insights there. Thanks again, Leah. About anyone else? Lori and Vanessa, yes, please.
Yeah, hi, you get a duo with us. Say your name. Lori Smith, I'm visiting from Vermont. My daughter Vanessa lives here. And I just wanted to share with you guys that I just finished the first in-person retreat back at IMS a couple weeks ago. And Tuari was one of our teachers, and she was the person I met with. So it was really
nice.
Yeah, it was great. I wanted to pick up on the theme of self-compassion and forgiveness came up a lot for me personally, but in the teachings there were six teachers. It was really wonderful. And I also wanted to pick up the image, which is so great, Philip Moffitt's image of using this as fertilizer. You know, it's like we come out of the dirt and the mud of our lives and hopefully sprout those lotuses. But it's just a very hopeful way to see it. Like one of the teachers at that retreat said, let things end that need to end. And that seemed really wise. And but to use that as mulch and fertilizer for what then wants to come into being. So that's a really great image. Yeah.
Thank you. And nice having you here visiting with us.
Thank you, everybody.
Yeah. Yeah. We all feel very fortunate that Tuari is one of our guiding teachers, so I'm glad you got to meet her. Yeah, you know, Philip's comment, let the experience go, allow it to have its death in the flow of time. and allow its death to be the fertilizer for what you cultivate in the life that it has left for you. I think that's just powerful. So thanks for your response, Vanessa. Lillian and Nikhil. Hi, from Idaho.
Hey. Hi. Yeah, something that had come up in our group was the difficulty of when the winds are blowing favorably, remembering what it was like when they weren't, and vice versa, and kind of just the present being feeling so strong, it's hard to kind of even things out and kind of prepare yourself for when they're going to shift. And I think for me personally, something that, you know, I was thinking about was just the one of the difficulties being the intersection of what is your own conception of yourself versus your the conception of yourself that you want, how you want to view yourself, and then that all versus how do you want others to view you, and how they like interact with like the labels that you attach to yourself, and kind of how those all interact.
Wow, yeah. There's a lot of stuff to work with here in these winds. Yeah, thank you for sharing that. Peter, and then Jerry.
Sure. Yeah. Thank you so much for the teaching and the great breakout group. And there's that story that you had about working as a barista and encountering the city council person. It really struck home with some of my own experiences and relates to what was being said about praise and blame taking place in the context of relationship, and how much our connections with others are also intertwined with our identity, and the reflection we get back with them, the acknowledgement of pieces of identity that we hold on to, and how attached we are to that. and then a relationship happens, you know, and then it's either getting confirmed, these pieces of identity are either being confirmed or injured, or old identities are raised back up out of the compost, you know, and we want to dust them off. It's just, it's wonderful stuff to consider.
I know. I love how in the Dharma we think this all is wonderful stuff. You know, it really is. And it's like Nikhil said too, that remembering that, you know, the good feelings of the praise, and then, you know, tomorrow that might be gone. It might be something all different in the, you know, that the lovely mantra of all things are impermanent. They arise and they pass away. To be at peace with this truth brings great happiness. And there's great, so it's so true. Yeah. So thank you. Thanks. Peter and Jerry.
Real quick, you know, during all this, we've been talking about the being recipients of praise and blame. And it occurred to me, it's nice to reflect on the degree to which I'm the originator of praise and blame towards others. How much, you know, how much am I projecting out there?
Yeah. Yeah. And sometimes I was thinking about, my daughter-in-law has a new job, and it's been really, really difficult. She's just been having such a hard time. You know how it is going into a new organization. And one day she forwarded to me this text that one of her employees sent to her of just appreciation. And she said it totally changed her view of that day, of just getting appreciation from somebody that they really liked that she was there and what she was doing. And so offering praise and appreciation, and not like overthinking it, you know, just doing it, is a good thing. And then knowing how to offer the critiques when that all gets into the whole thing of wise speech and truthful, helpful, kind, beneficial, appropriate, timely, all of that kind of stuff. Yeah, thank you for reminding us that, you know, what happens when we're the originator of all this? Yeah. Well, thank you all so much. I'm going to turn it back over to Dane for our closing. It's been lovely being with you today.
Thanks, Suze, for the nice talk, and thanks everyone for their sharing. I'll do our Donna talk and then go over announcements and close. For Donna, Sims and its teachers freely offer the teachings of the Buddha to all, regardless of ability to pay. We appreciate your generosity, Donna, today, and many thanks for the Donna you have already offered to support Sims and our teachers' livelihood. Donna to teachers and to Sims can be made by going to the donation tab on the homepage of the Sims website. And then we'll close with a short offering of metta. If you want to take the meditative posture and maybe gently close your eyes or hold the soft gaze towards the floor. May I be safe and protected. May I be full of love. May I live with ease. May all beings be safe and protected. May all beings be full of love. May all beings live with ease. Thanks for joining us, everyone.